You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
And now for your feature presentation.
One, or two, or three, or four, but five, Force Five.
What's up, listeners? I am your host, ex-video store clerk, screenwriter, and fellow listener Jason Kleberg, and this is Force 5, a show where I force my guests to come up with a movie-themed top 5 list topic, and then we reveal our picks on air. Before I get into the show, if you're listening to this the day it drops, it's a day before Election Day. If you don't have a plan to get to the polls and vote, please do so. Use your power, and let's make sure this country is not a dictatorship or a mirror of Nazi Germany come January. Go vote. It's all we can do. If you've been feeling election anxiety like I have, hopefully this show and other film podcasts like it provide you some entertainment in these times of weirdness. All right, Lindsay Dunn from One of My Stories joined me this week to talk top 5 Zero to Hero films. When I think about Zero to Hero, it's about characters who are nobodies, outsiders, underdogs who lack the confidence, skills, and resources to accomplish what they need to, but they have a drive towards a goal that they eventually achieve by showing resilience, bravery, and belief in themselves. Zero to Hero stories have been in the fabric of storytelling for centuries, with mythological tales like Perseus, Hercules, and the Iliad certainly standing the test of time. Film examples like Spider-Man, Rocky, Mulan, for example, inspire audiences with the idea that anybody, no matter how you start, has the potential for greatness. In this episode, you're going to hear a lot of examples of this, and I can almost guarantee, you know what, I'm going to say it, I can guarantee that you'd never guess what our number one picks were. If you're a longtime listener to Force 5, welcome back. I hope you know how much I appreciate you, and if you're a new listener, hello, welcome to the List Nerd family. Please consider subscribing and rating the show wherever you are listening. It helps me out, helps the show. Without further ado, here's Lindsay Dunn and top 5 Zero to Hero films. Welcome back to the Force 5 podcast. Today, my guest is film critic Lindsay Dunn. In addition to being a member of the Southeastern and North Carolina Film Critics Associations, she's a podcaster, she's a musician, and she runs One of My Stories. Lindsay Dunn, how are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here, Jason.
Excited to have you. Great topic. Now, Lindsay, when I have a new guest on, I think it's important to get a sense of your cinematic taste. So I'm going to start off by asking you, what are some of your favorite films of all time?
Yeah, always a daunting task to try to enumerate your taste. I think my longstanding favorite film is going to have to continue to be Lawrence of Arabia. It's, of course, a film of epic proportions, but I think what really keeps me keeping this as my top movie is it's a mystery I can never really solve. It's a movie that no matter how many times I watch it, I cannot really solve the mystery of Lawrence and who he was and why things ended the way they did in that movie. Now, his life story is slightly diverges from the film. They made fictional work of his life in some instances. But when I watch the film, I'm like, oh, he got so close and then it all fell apart. What went wrong? And you're like, what was going on inside of his head? He's such an enigma. So that's definitely top of my list. I also wanted to mention a category I like to call like films is therapy. So in there, I'll put things like Lars and the Real Girl and Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. They sort of reveal things about life and relationships that are true and in a heartwarming way, in a really interesting way. And then I also like films that echo my life. So one instance for that would be The Place Beyond the Pines. It's a great film about fathers. But it has a special connection to me because when I watch that film, it makes me think about my nephew. So it sort of matches parts of your life that you recognize. And then I also wanted to mention a film that I watched many years ago that is in my favorites collection called The House of Sand and Fog. And it stars Jennifer Connelly and, that guy, Ben Kingsley. He's awesome. But, you know, it was a movie that sort of opened my eyes about an issue I hadn't thought about, which would be immigration and the reality. So those are the kinds of movies I'm attracted to and sort of the categories of films that I'm definitely interested in. So those are some that I'll mention. Yeah.
Awesome. Lawrence of Arabia. Did you see the re-release in theaters? It just happened like last month, I think.
I sure did. Anytime that is on the big screen, I'm there.
Awesome. I was hoping to be able to make it, but I wasn't able to go. It was like the theater by me was only playing on a Sunday and I had already had plans. And then one other thing I'll mention, films as therapy. Have you gotten a chance to see the film My Old Ass yet?
I haven't, but it looks really interesting. I love Aubrey Plaza too as a bonus.
Yeah, she's great in it, but that movie is a really thought-provoking, really touching movie. I think you should definitely see that. Just based on the other films that you like from that kind of subcategory, I think you'll really like it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for sharing some of those with us. Lindsay, you run a brand called One of My Stories. I was going to say it was a website. Originally, I was going to say it was a podcast, but it's more than that. It is really a brand. Where can listeners find it, and what is One of My Stories all about?
Yeah, so I've been writing about films since 2007, but I've rebranded myself 3 times in there. And I think, you know, I fell prey to what a lot of people do, which is I really didn't know what I was doing. I just knew I wanted to write about movies. I wanted to dip my toe into it. And so I was just like, made my brand about me and like the fact that this is who I am. And so I think, you know, originally my website was just called Lindsay Says or something like that, very conceited, like, who's Lindsay, who cares? Then later I kind of changed it to I Won't Go Back, because I was thinking about wanting to keep moving forward in life. And then at a certain point I took a break and I stopped doing it, and I was doing other things on with my website, like writing poetry and writing about relationships, like the therapy aspect, writing about things like enabling codependency and things that, you know, were harmful that I see many times. And so I was kind of doing something completely different, and I sort of took a break from it all. And then I met someone that had a game board, like he created games, and he had been doing a podcast for years, and I was really impressed by the fact that he had a brand, and sort of that brand communicated who he was and let people know what to expect. And so I really sat down this time and I thought about who I was and what I wanted to do. And I came up with the name One of My Stories because I was thinking of how important stories are to me, how they've helped me to develop. A story could be communicated through a book, through a movie, through a TV show, through a song. And the thing is that these stories like shape us and they form us into who we are. And so that let people know kind of what to expect from me, and also help me like shape and choose what projects I would work on and focus on. So I started at that point, I was going to film festivals, and that's how I became a film critic, because I met some film critics and asked them like, how do you become a real film critic? And it used to be that you'd have to work at a paper and get paid to be considered a critic. These days it's different. And it's really about, do people accept you as a critic? And so you need to join an organization. So at that point, I joined and became an official film critic and got screeners and was able to get things in advance. And then I wanted to start a podcast, and I couldn't figure out how to do that technologically. So I just started. That was the time of Zoom, and began a YouTube channel with Zoom things I would do. And then I figured out the whole podcasting thing and started a podcast. So the YouTube channel that I used to use for most of my stuff is still being used, and it's in process, and I make things, but just not as often as I would, say, create a podcast episode or write. Writing is really what I'm mainly doing right now. I may change to podcasting. I think I'm more talented as a writer. When I podcast, I have to sort of write things down so that I don't stumble all over my words. But yes, that's what I do. And so what you will find there would be searches for truth, intersections of faith and film, films that illuminate life, and good storytelling that illuminates culture or shows how the world could or should be. I tend to do pretty deep analysis and reflection in my writing. So my website is just plain old oneofmystories.com. That's the number oneofmystories.com. And you can find my YouTube channel, podcast, and all that by just typing one of my stories in any search. And I'm the one that comes up. There's a link tree that is on all my sites. So if you want to find everything, you can use that. So that's how you find me and what my site's all about.
Cool. And you're going to find links to all of those in the show notes, listeners. So just duck down there and it'll be there. Lindsay, do you have any advice for aspiring film critics out there? You've been writing, it seems like, a very long time. Any advice for aspiring film critics?
It's important to be clear on your purpose. Just saying, I love movies isn't really enough. You need to figure out your lens and communicate that clearly. Focus on the projects that fit your purpose, and then talk to other critics and work with them. Learn from them. Collaborate with people. Don't be afraid to message people, like I messaged you, Jason, and said, are we still going to podcast together? You know, all people can say is no. So you have to reach out and go for what you want.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people are receptive to that. There are plenty of people that I've sent messages to that I expected to either get ignored or get a no. And they were like, yeah, let's do this. Well, Lindsay, tonight we are talking zero to hero films. What drew you to the topic?
I think that this topic is one of my favorite types of movies. It's a really hopeful theme. You know, the person starts with nothing and they fall even further than nothing. They fall from neutral, then they climb, they level up, they work hard, and they get somewhere. They make progress. And it lets us think that we could do it. You know, this fall to the lowly state. Go from ground zero. The great loss, the great rise, they level up, they learn these special techniques, they become mentally stronger. I think these movies, when you watch them, they create a sense of ecstasy in the experience. That's something that you don't often, it's very unique. So there's many feelings you can experience when watching a movie, but watching a zero to hero comes with a special elation or ecstasy as you watch it. You just feel really happy and you want to, you want to cheer and jump up when they get what they want. It just fills you with joy.
Lindsay, do you have any heroic moments? any moments in your life where you could say, I was a hero?
One thing that came to mind when I saw you ask me this question is I had my own training montage that took place recently. As you get older, you start to think you can't learn to do anything new. There are many things I can't do. I never learned to ride a bike, for instance. Another thing I never learned to do was how to hula hoop. And I don't know, I can't remember why exactly, but one day I was looking at YouTube videos on hula hooping and thinking, boy, I wish I really could hula hoop. That would be cool. And I came across a video, and I think his channel's still active. It's called Hoop Smiles. And it was a video I saw about how he taught an absolute beginner how to hula hoop. And so I was watching these videos and I learned the secret. I learned the secret, Jason. And that's what these people have to do in this movie. They have to learn the secret to getting better. And the secret is to get a gigantic hoop. A hoop that is so large that it's really hard to find one of the size you need because that makes it, when you have a larger hoop, it forces the hoop to slow down. You can actually learn the motion. And so I bought the hoop. I actually bought one hula hoop that I had to return because it was almost too big. I was like, this isn't going to work. So then I had to get and find another company that had my hula hoop is 50 inches in diameter total. So I had to find it. I had to wait. And so I was doing a lot of, there was a lot of failure doing this. You know, I would try what that I had been shown and, it fell over and over again. And I thought, I'm never going to learn how to do this. But sure enough, I know how to hula hoop now. And so I felt pretty heroic learning how to do that. I didn't think this day would ever come, but it really does work if you are willing to fail and be humiliated a bunch of times.
Well, thanks for sharing that story with me. Next up, maybe the bike. We'll see. Lindsay Dunn, are you ready to get into our list, top 5 Zero to Hero films?
I sure am.
You know what's going to happen? You know what's happening right now? How you know what's going to happen?
No.
Words? You just made the list!
Top 5.
All right, why don't you kick us off here with your number 5?
Okay, now, I was waiting for you to ask me if I had any special process in
Oh, yeah, we can go there. We can go there.
Can we make a pit stop there before I reveal the
Absolutely.
First
one? So, let's see. Number one, how did you maybe whittle down your list? And number two, is there any criteria that you had for your heroicism?
I think, you know, if one of the qualifications, I had more qualifications than anything else. I think specifically in order to start with the zero, you have to lose a lot of stuff. And so that was really important to look for. You also need to become a hero. You need to do, the end result needs to be something we root for. And I think you have to differentiate this theme from other themes, such as underdog stories, which can be a group. For me, Zero to Hero is definitely like an individual, one person, and it's not a zero to anti-hero situation where they become really good at being a bad guy. So those are some things I looked at when trying to whittle this down.
All right, yeah, we're on the same page there. I kind of went with people who had very low to no expectations starting out in the story. They're all individuals, and they all do go from zero to a heroic act that you're rooting for. I didn't put any, let's see, I don't have any sports ones on here, because I was looking at more a hero in the traditional sense and not, you know, the person kicking the field goal at the end of the game. So that's kind of how I did my list. And I do have a couple on here. Sometimes I will take films off that I have talked about on the show before, but I've got a couple on here that I've talked about on the show before. I've got 3 on my list, though, that I don't think have ever made a... I know that for a fact they haven't made a list. 2 of them, for sure, have never even been mentioned on this show, so that'll be fun. Lindsay Dunn, what do you got at number 5 on your list of Zero to Hero films?
So my number 5 is actually a brand new movie this year, and it's Monkey Man, directed by Dev Patel.
When I was a boy, my mother used to tell me a story of a demon king and his army. They brought fire and terror to the land until they faced the protector of the people, the white monkey.
You need to fight for all of us.
Spooky.
This is actually his directorial debut, and I couldn't be more happy he decided to make this movie. For people who haven't seen it, Dev Patel plays Kid. Kid has memories of growing up, loved and protected by his mother, and she knit in his bones the stories and prayers of the Hindu people. Kid's life tale is a story of the Hanuman. The Hanuman thought the sun was a mango and he tried to eat it. His thoughtless action burns him to a crisp and returns him to a lowly state. He forgets his power and purpose and becomes the lowest of the low. Eventually, he rises from the ashes, reborn, and claims his rightful place again. As an adult, Kid has become a street fighter, paid to lose. Turns out, he's been living on scraps, just waiting for the right moment to push play on his ultimate plan, to punish the people who stole his life of happiness from him. How he accomplishes this is the point of the film that I won't spoil. And, you know, this movie is all about Dev Patel's performance, and it's hard to direct yourself, and some people do it in a way that gets mocked, I think, by the media, because you know, I'm thinking of like Kenneth Branagh, for instance, directing himself in a 4-hour Hamlet. And that can come across as kind of egotistical. But I think he's, Dev Patel is such a likable person. You know, he came on the scene with Slumdog Millionaire, and he had this face that sort of lit up with this goofy grin. And but I remember thinking how attractive he was even then. And so something about the fact that his character seemed to be able to love so fiercely even after such suffering. And he tries to carry the burdens of others at his own expense in many of his roles. Now, in The Green Knight, he played a more roguish ne'er-do-well and goes back to, he goes back to suffering and silence. And so I think Dev Patel is now leveled up from actor to director. One thing I think is notable about this movie is, you know, you think of a John Wick stylized action flick, everything's choreographed to perfection. But with Monkey Man, it has this very gritty feel, and you feel like you can feel the punches in your gut. It has a great score by Jed Crisell. A lot of my Zero to Hero movies, Jason, you'll hear, have great scores. That seems to be a characteristic they all have. And so that is my number 5 pick. Have you seen Monkey Man?
I have. I didn't love Monkey Man, but I did love the kitchen fight scene. I thought that was one of the better fight scenes that I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
I do go back and rewatch that every once in a while just to check it out. And I thought Dev Patel was great. I think his direction's great. I can see a long career behind the camera for him as well. So I am excited to see what he does next. My number 5, let's see, I didn't even put numbers on mine, so let's just fly by the seat of our pants here. Number 5, I'll go with one that I have mentioned on this show before, but it was one of the first ones that came to my mind when you said this, and it's funny because I've talked about this pick with a couple of my friends, and they were saying, wow, I wouldn't even have thought of that. So maybe this is one that most people won't think of as a Zero to Hero film, but I think it is, and that's 2004's Collateral, starring Jamie Foxx as our Zero named Max.
Most people, 10 years from now, same job, same place, same routine. Man, you don't know where you'd be 10 minutes from now.
You just met him once and you kill him like that?
But I should only kill people after I get to know them. You drive a cab, I make my rounds. You might make it through the night.
Oh no!
Collateral.
New news. We're ahead of schedule.
This film is not yet rated.
At the beginning of this movie, Max is a taxi driver in LA, and the first passenger that we see in his car is Annie. She's a California district attorney, and Max is telling her all about his dreams of starting his own limo business. And we find out over the course of the film that he's not really getting anywhere close to his dream. It's just this pipe dream that he seems to tell all the passengers that come to his into his car. And we also find out that he's been lying to his mom at one point because he tells his mom that he's running a successful limo business. So that's kind of the state of Max in the beginning of this movie. Unfortunately for him, the second passenger in his car is a guy named Vincent, played by Tom Cruise. And Vincent tells Max he's in town to settle a real estate deal. He wants to hire Max for a couple of stops and basically use him throughout the night. And soon after, really after the first stop, he realizes that Vincent is not in town for a real estate deal. He's a hitman. And he kind of gets tangled up with Vincent and is essentially held hostage for the night as he makes these stops. Like I said, directed by Michael Mann, a great look at Los Angeles. I don't think anybody films Los Angeles like Michael Mann does. It's just kind of in his blood with movies like Heat. And you have Tom Cruise going against type. I think this is the only movie where he's been a villain, and I really think he should do it more often because he looks great here as this silver-haired fox that's just going around killing people throughout the night. It's very different from what you have seen from Tom Cruise in movies like Top Gun and his more heroic feats. But of course, this is really focused on Jamie Foxx as Max. The ending of this movie, I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it. I really highly recommend you watch this, but it builds from that first scene to the last scene and really has a nice wraparound in giving Max a chance to be heroic. In the final scene ends on a train. There's a deck that's stacked against him with an expert and a hostage involved, and Max really gets to be the hero that he's wanted to be. So I think Collateral is amazing. I watched it again for this episode, and I will always love to revisit this one. It's one of my favorite Michael Mann films. I think it's underseen comparatively to his other films, and I think more people should give it a shot.
I haven't seen it before. It's one of those movies that whenever I see the trailer, I think, I really should watch that movie.
That's so good.
I'll definitely watch it now.
All right, number four for you.
Number four is going to be the first Zero to Hero movie I think I ever saw or remember seeing. And so in a way, it's the one that they're all measured up against. And it's the 1984 Karate Kid, directed by John G. Avildsen.
The odds are on their side. Experience is on their side. But now he's got someone on his side.
Fighting always last answer.
Someone who knows what it takes.
Always will come ahead.
And is willing to share it.
You're the
best friend I ever had.
You're pretty okay, too.
The Karate Kid.
Now playing at a theater near you. Check your local listings.
So I'm sure most people have seen this movie, but if you haven't, a kid named Daniel LaRusso from Jersey moves to the San Fernando Valley. He struggles to find friends and a new place to fit in. And after he hits on the wrong girl, he becomes the target of karate-wielding kids who call themselves the Cobra Kai. Well, their teacher actually calls them Cobra Kai. I shouldn't say they call themselves. Daniel's in despair until he meets Mr. Miyagi, the mysterious handyman that works at his apartment complex. And this has all of the components, I think, that I look for in a Zero to Hero movie. I mean, it makes sense. It's the one they're all measured about. He has these weird teaching strategies that Mr. Miyagi does to Daniel. And Daniel sort of questioning, like, why did I even think that I could get help from this old man? He's much more impressed by what happens in the Cobra Kai gym because it's all flashy and there's a lot of awards. And so he's sort of dazzled by that stuff while Mr. Miyagi is just a lone guy at his house fishing and teaching him how to like wax his deck and paint his fences. And he thinks maybe it's some weird form of child abuse that he's gone into. But also Daniel is in need. Has needs, like he needs a parent, he needs a mentor, and Mr. Miyagi opens his eyes and helps him to grow. And of course, as he's learning under Mr. Miyagi, he becomes much better at karate, and it spawned sequels, TV show Cobra Kai that has become another, continued the joy for me of getting to experience the world of the Miyagi-verse over and over again. And it has a great score by Bill Conti. And I feel confident that you've seen Karate Kid, Jason.
I have seen Karate Kid. It's been forever, though. I probably saw it when I was 10 or less, and I haven't seen it since then. I own the disc. I just haven't been able to watch it again. And I probably will now that I have a kid. I'll probably put it on for one of our... We do family movie nights on Fridays, so maybe I'll toss it in for one of these family movie nights. I've never seen the TV show, but I've heard a lot of good things about it.
I must warn you, if you show it to your kid, you're probably going to have to watch the TV show and all the sequels because kids love this movie.
Yeah. I remember liking it quite a bit when I was a kid. And Bill Conti, I didn't know he did the score for this. He's done some iconic scores.
Yeah, I mean, even as it, there were some, you know, Karate Kid 2 is a pretty good movie. Karate Kid 3 is kind of bad, but they've retrograded it great for the show. But that Bill Conti score is in there making you cry at any movie, no matter how sort of cheesy it gets.
All right, that's a great pick. My number four relates in that our Zero in my number four is also a martial arts student. I could have gone with a lot of different superhero movies for this list because superheroes typically are Zero to Hero stories initially. But I didn't want to go with something that everybody has seen. I kind of wanted to come up with something new for this. So I'm going with 1991's The Guyver.
They are here among us now. Nothing less than the fate of the human race is at stake when this girl meets this boy.
I don't know what the hell that is, and I'm not sure I want to find out.
The most lethal weapon ever conceived. A one-of-a-kind prototype. And all you have for me is he pulled a switch.
Have you seen this movie or heard of this movie?
I don't think so.
No? Okay. So the Guyver, oh, this movie's so weird, but it's so much fun. It's about this guy named Sean. He's this middling martial arts student. He's, the first time we see him, he's in class, and a CIA agent played by Mark Hamill walks in and starts questioning this guy's girlfriend who's there to watch him, you know, do class. And he witnesses the conversation. He doesn't hear what's going on because they're behind glass, but he sees them talking, and then they both leave together. And so Sean follows, and it turns out that his girlfriend, her dad is a scientist, and he's been working with this company called Kronos, and he was supposed to meet up with the CIA guys, and unfortunately never showed up for the meet. So that means bad news for her dad. Well, Sean shows up. He's, you know, dicking around in the crime scene like he's not supposed to. And he finds this kind of mechanical looking disc. And it turns out that was the father's research. So he chucks it in his backpack and he goes on his way. Well, when he's on his way back, he is assaulted by this gang. His scooter breaks down and he's assaulted by this gang. And this piece of technology flies out of his backpack. When they're beating him up, his face lands right on this thing and it envelops him into this suit, and it's a suit called the Guyver. And this thing gives him some like really interesting special powers, and all of a sudden his skills and karate moves are way enhanced, and he finds himself up against the president of this company called Kronos and the thugs. And if they get a hold of this suit, well, it's going to destroy the world. A couple of reasons why you should watch this movie. Number one, if you're into practical special effects, there's nobody better in my mind. Well, maybe Tom Savini is number one, but I think number two would be Screaming Mad George. And Screaming Mad George was tapped on the shoulder to do this movie after he did Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master. And he said, yes, I'll do it, but on one condition, I want to be able to direct. So he brought his other friend, Steve Wang, also a great effects artist, and the two of them co-direct this movie. So all of the suits, all of the effects, they're pretty much all done practically, although there's some crazy early 90s CGI in this, which, you know, is really fun. But when you see the Kronos Corporation has been doing a lot of experiments on people, and the Guyver is not the only experiment that they've worked on. There are fishmen. There are giant gremlin-like looking creatures, and every thug in this movie kind of changes into something. And it was like the Power Rangers villains before Power Rangers. It's really, really fun. The last third of this movie is absolutely insane. It takes place in a laboratory. We get a chest burster type of scenario that happens. We see Mark Hamill turned into a horrifyingly grotesque monster, which is a really well done scene, but very sickening. It's not a kid's movie. It's based on, I believe it's based on a manga that was pretty gory and pretty intense. So you get a lot of that in this movie. Highly recommend checking out The Guyver from 1991. There was a sequel, I think, that came out in 1994 that was pretty well received as well. And they replaced Sean with another actor in that one. I have a soft spot for The Guyver. I rewatched it again for our conversation today to make sure I was on the right track, and I certainly was.
Okay, another one I'll have to check out. The Guyver. I'm trying to even imagine how this is spelled. Is it?
It is G-U-Y-V-E-R. And if you're interested in watching it in the best way possible, there's a new 4K edition of this out. It looks better now than it ever has before.
Is this one of the ones that's the first time mentioned on your show?
This is, yeah. This has never been mentioned on this show before. Hey, listeners, jumping in here real quick to tell you about today's sponsor, but I'm going to let them tell you how it is. We've got a sale on some VHS tapes.
This week at all Record Bar outlets, a new dimension of sight and sound. Scotch EG all-purpose video cassettes L750 or T120, only $4.99. Scotch EXG video cassettes unsurpassed color L750 or T120, only $7.99. Scotch video head cleaner, the sure way to clean VCR heads, Beta or VHS, only $14.99. On sale now at all Record Bar outlets.
Hello, my name is Kevin Tudor, and I'm one of the three hosts of Almost Major, a film podcast dissecting many major indie studios and the films they release. Every week, myself, Charlie Nash, and Bryden Doyle discuss overlooked, forgotten, or bona fide classic indie films via studio-specific miniseries. We've previously covered numerous films from Artisan Entertainment, Lionsgate Films, and New Line Cinema. Titles including The Blair Witch Project, American Psycho, Dogville, But I'm a Cheerleader, Saw, Requiem for a Dream, and Ringmaster, you know, the Jerry Springer film. Anyways, we have a fun time every week and we hope you will join us. Subscribe to Almost Major wherever you get your podcasts. Now proudly a part of the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network.
So my number three is actually going to be another childhood favorite. I can't remember if I watched this one before or after The Karate Kid, but I was surprised to look it up and see that it was came out in 1979. I didn't realize it came out that long ago. And so this is The Black Stallion, directed by Carol Ballard.
If you want to believe in magic, in beauty, in friendship, and freedom, believe in The Black Stallion.
The biggest, the blackest, and the strongest, the most beautiful horse that ever was.
Francis Ford Coppola presents Walter Farley's timeless classic, Whose Time Has Come, The Black Stallion. The story of a legendary horse who could only be tamed by a young boy's love. Together, they survive a shipwreck.
So this is the story of Alec and the Black, a wild Arabian stallion. Alec is a very quiet old soul who goes on a steamship cruise with his parents, or it might just be his dad, in the 1940s, and he meets the Black, who's being transported. You know, I don't know who had the idea to transport a horse on a ship. I guess that's the way they had to do it. But the ship sinks, and both Alec and the horse survive on a deserted island. At first, he isn't really able to approach the horse because it's this wild horse who has been mistreated by humans, but gradually they form a bond and get rescued, and then Alec ends up having to integrate the Black into his life at home, and he becomes a racehorse in a series of horse races. So there are many horse movies that I think could apply in this zero to hero category. But I had to mention The Black Stallion because I believe it was the first one for me. And every time these other horse movies came out, I'd be like, well, they're just copying The Black Stallion. It really tugs at your heartstrings. And it's sometimes when you remember a movie as a kid, you're like, oh, it probably wasn't that good. But during COVID, I had access to the Disney Channel for like the first time. And The Black Stallion was on there, and I was missing my sister, and I was thinking, I'm gonna watch this movie, and it was just bizarre. Maybe call it childhood nostalgia, but I was sobbing during this movie, watching, you know, the horse ends up rescuing him from a cobra snake, and then he slowly approaches the horse. A lot of it's done without dialogue between this boy and this horse, and just their sweet relationship and their love for one another is what makes this movie really special. The horse rescues him, he rescues the horse, vice versa, and it's not really spoken of in the movie, but you get the feeling that Alec is sort of an awkward, painful childhood. He's very quiet, so you can imagine he's probably not making friends easily. It's implied that his parents are maybe their marriage is on the rocks or they're separated. And another thing that's notable is that it's set in the 1940s, but as a kid, that just didn't really dawn on me. So, but it feels timeless. And then also, it's got a great score. I'm feeling myself tearing up as I'm talking to you about this. But the score is, I was like, really? Carmine Coppola. So, relative of Francis Ford and all the Coppola people. It's got great music and one of those animal bonding movies that you never really grow out of, I guess, as an adult. So that's my number three. Jason, do these movies tug at your heartstring like they do mine?
You know, I've never seen The Black Stallion. You said this is on Disney Plus?
It was at one point. Do they still rotate movies in and out of their catalog? I don't know.
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure I can find it somewhere, but it sounds like another one that I should watch with my kiddo.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to your number three and I was thinking, well, there's probably no way I can transition from your number three into my number three until you said that you cried while you watched it, because I definitely cried while I watched my number three. It's this completely different style of movie.
Mm-hmm.
This one actually came out last year in 2023 and it has made one other list on this show. It made my top five of 2023 last year. It is Godzilla Minus One. Godzilla Minus One, or Zero, is Koichi. He's a kamikaze pilot, and in the very first scene of this movie, he lands on an island that's set up to fix planes for the Japanese army. And he brings his plane down. He says that there's something wrong with the plane. The mechanics can't find anything wrong with the plane, so they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then a small version of Godzilla, this is a young Godzilla, shows up. And during the skirmish, Koichi is instructed to go get his plane to use the 50 cal guns on board, and he hesitates, and everybody but the lead mechanic and Koichi are wiped out. And he is branded a coward by everybody that he runs into. He's shipped back. The lead mechanic obviously thinks he's a coward, but when he gets back to his village back home, they also see him as a coward because he was not expected to return. He's a kamikaze pilot. He was expected to kill himself for Japan. And so he starts living in the destroyed village. He has made a bond with a woman who has a child with her. And so they kind of make this makeshift family and they start living amongst the rubble and slowly start building themselves back up. Her name is Noriko. And then he starts working on a fishing boat that's designed to locate and destroy mines in the ocean because the war at this point is over. We just get to spend a lot of time with Koichi, and he really has a low opinion of himself as well. When his friends ask him about Noriko and their relationship, he kind of passes it off like, she and I aren't together. And it's not because he doesn't want to be, it's because he doesn't think that he's deserving of love. And there's a scene in the city where Noriko has a heroic moment for herself, where she shoves Koichi out of danger from another Godzilla encounter. And after that moment, he joins a team that is going to take down Godzilla and become the kamikaze pilot that he believes he was supposed to be. This is a fantastic film in all regards. Like I said, it made my top five list of 2023. It was number three on that list. Since then, it won the Oscar for Best Visual Effects, which it totally deserved. Marvel spectacles ring in at, like, I don't know, $200 million budgets. And you still see dodgy CGI in those movies. There has to be some type of racketeering going on because you don't see $200 million worth of money on screen. This was said to have cost under $20 million. I think they said between $15 and $20 million. And you see every dollar on screen. This film looks amazing. And since we last talked about it on here, it's also come out in a 4-disc collector's edition. I think it's actually now out of print, but it's an amazing looking collection. The standard 4K disc is coming out soon. And it was also released in a black and white version, which is called Godzilla Minus One Minus Color. And it also looks great. It was not just a hue change. During post-production, there was actually a colorist assigned to create a black and white version. And of that version, the director said, quote, rather than just making it monochrome, it is a cut by cut. I had them make adjustments while making full use of various mats as if they were creating a new movie, end quote. So if you've seen Godzilla Minus One and you want to see it in a whole new light, or rather a lack of color, you could do that. Godzilla Minus One, Minus Color. So yeah, that's my number three. I really, really love this movie. And I love that underdog story, or that really zero to hero story in there. It's what keeps it together. And I think I said this during my original review. It felt like when I was watching this movie, it felt like Godzilla was interrupting the human parts of this story for me. And I think that's the strength of this movie, because when you go to see a Godzilla movie, typically you want to see Godzilla rain havoc on people. And in this one, I wanted less of Godzilla. I wanted more of the humans. And it really, really has a satisfying climax.
Yeah, it was in my top 10 from last year. I can't remember exactly what position it was put on, but I'm a huge fan of the Godzilla movies in general. But there was something about, I think it was the way it came out so close after Oppenheimer, but it just felt so much more weighty than any Godzilla movie I'd seen. And that, you know, this was a return to a Japanese Godzilla movie. We've had sort of the American studios, which are feel like more spectacles than anything else. So you're right. It had a very human story. And I didn't think of it as a zero to hero, but it totally is. So we're on to my number two pick. And this, I will say, is maybe the movie that got me thinking about picking this topic in a way, because, you know, after we had a podcast with Steve on, we talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and that sort of got me thinking about Quentin Tarantino again. And so then after we podcasted, I ended up watching both the Kill Bill movies, which is that's my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, The Kill Bill. So I'm going to say Kill Bill Volume 2, although, of course, they work in tandem.
I was quite the professional in an exclusive industry, and we all worked for this man, Bill. But when I tried to get out, they did me in.
I suppose it's a little late for an apology, huh? You suppose correctly.
Hi.
You have every right to want to get here.
Get even? Even, Stephen? I would have to kill you. That'd be about square.
Kill Bill. Rated R. In theaters on October 10.
I'm sure this movie has been mentioned on the show, but it's about the bride who gets revenge on Bill and his posse of assassins for hire after they slaughter her whole family and friends and all the people she cares about. I think out of all the movies on my list, probably nobody got as zeroed as the bride. I mean, she's left for dead. She has her child stolen. She really gets left in a bad, bad place. And so she's going after all of the people that have harmed her and will culminate with Bill. Now, one of my favorite moments, and probably the reason this movie is on the list, is her training segment with Pai Mei. And there's something about that scene that just is so empowering, I think, as a female, and probably, you know, people who aren't female also feel the same way. But you really, back to when we're talking about the film and why I wanted to do this theme, you want to believe that, yes, you too could learn how to break a board at a few inches from you so that you could break through a coffin. When all hope is lost, she resorts to the techniques, the secret techniques she learned from Pai Mei. And there's the glorious scene when she's, you know, she starts in the coffin and you think, boy, this lady's dead. And then they go back to the history and you see her past with Pai Mei. Now, you don't see everything. You don't see the one thing she was taught that lets her ultimately win. But you see that you see like sort of her path and her journey learning from him and how terrible she was as a fighter and how humiliated she was. And then, then you go back to where she's in this coffin buried alive. And you see her break through this coffin and break through the earth like an almost a literal resurrection from the dead. And it's perfectly paired with this score by Ennio Morricone. And it's magnificent. It's enough that makes you want to shout your eternal yop over the universe and do your own like Walt Whitman yopping. So that's going to have to be my number two pick, Jason.
Kill Bill, that's an interesting one. I actually did not even think of this. I was going through my shelves yesterday and I considered Django Unchained, but I already had a Jamie Foxx movie on my list. Mm-hmm. But this works too. Yeah, this is a great pick and I love Kill Bill. It got me into looking at all these references too for the movies that came before it that inspired Tarantino. And I've seen so many movies because of this movie. Mm-hmm. Huge soft spot for Kill Bill. Love it. All right, my number two is one that I thought if we're going to have any crossover, it might be this one. The zero in question here is Hercules from Disney's 1997 film Hercules. I figure, how can I have a list for zero to hero and leave off a movie that has a song literally titled Zero to Hero? For those who have not seen Hercules, it takes place in ancient Greece. And it starts off with most of the gods, they're happy for Zeus and Hera because they have a son named Hercules. But Zeus's wicked brother Hades plots to overthrow Zeus and rule Mount Olympus. So Hades learns that in 18 years, a planetary alignment is going to allow him to free the Titans to conquer Olympus, but only if Hercules does not interfere. Now, Hercules is immortal. He's a god. He has super strength. But in true kids movie Disney fashion, Hades sends his minions to murder the baby. And they have a potion that's going to strip him of his immortality. And so they kidnap the baby. They feed him the potion. But a farmer couple, interrupts them before Hades could drink every last drop. So he's only stripped of his immortality, but he retains his godlike strength. But as a teen, because of this strength, he's an outcast because he cannot control his strength. And we see some examples of this that are obviously funny. And throughout this process, he learns that he can earn back his godhood by becoming a true hero. So throughout his journey, he has to battle Hades, he has to battle the Cyclops, the Hydra, and more in order to save Olympus and his soon-to-be love interest, Meg. Like I said, it's got the song Zero to Hero. It's a great song, but I think my favorite song and one of my favorite Disney songs in general is Going the Distance. I think it's a very underrated song. It's got great voice acting talent. Danny DeVito's in there. He was almost not in this movie. They offered Danny DeVito the role, and he did not want to audition. So they auditioned people like Ed Asner, Ernest Borgnine, some others, and finally the directors just caught Danny DeVito at an Italian restaurant when he was filming Matilda. And they got him to sign on the line that was dotted. James Woods, I can't stand the man now, but he is a great voice actor. And as Hades, he really puts on a good performance. And I think it's a really underrated Disney movie. Development on this actually started in 1992. So Disney would do these things, and they may still do this, where they have a bunch of people like give rapid fire pitches and they get 2 minutes to pitch. And one of the pitches was an adaptation of The Odyssey. And that actually went into production, and then they failed to come up with anything good, so that choice was ditched. And Hercules was one of those pitches that they came back to, and I think after the success of Aladdin, and then in true Disney fashion, it just kind of like changed over time, and the original writer left, and they eventually came out with this in 1997. Do you like Hercules?
You know, it's been such a long time since I've seen it, but it's funny that you were talking about that song because I would, you know, was doing research and seeing what other people considered a zero to hero movie. So, of course, the first thing that comes up is that song. And today I saw it and I was like, maybe I'll listen to this song today. And I didn't do it, Jason, but I think I need to now. I need to know the song. We could have sung it together for, recorded it for the podcast to go with our theme.
We could have, yeah. And I can't even play it over the, you know, normally like sometimes I'll play the song or excerpts of the song, but it's Disney and they'll probably get my podcast taken down and murdered. So yeah, not going to risk that. All right, Lindsay, we're here. Number one, what do you got at the top of your list?
Yeah, so this is a movie that I have been wanting to talk about ever since I've seen it. Now I have an opportunity because of this list. And I think it's what I would call the ultimate zero to hero movie. So that is the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Do men have a right to say what they believe in? Or must they always do what the government says?
He was a hero. Shaolin techniques could be taught here. People could use it to fight the Manchu troops.
Nice.
Directed by Lau Kar-Long and starring Gordon Liu, which has a tie-in with Kill Bill Volume 2, of course, as he's also in Kill Bill 2. He's actually also in Kill Bill Volume 1. Probably, maybe, QT people know that, yes, he played dual roles in that movie. But this is a fictional rendering of a real, live martial arts disciple. So Liu Yude is the pupil of an activist teacher in rebellion against the Manchu government. And that is led by the brutal general Tian Ta. The general and his acolytes kill Yude's friends and family, and he ends up running away because he hears that the Shaolin monks are known as the best kung fu fighters ever, if only he could get there. They don't accept outsiders, but he arrives by fruit cart, and they are bound to help him because they're monks and they're going to be kind. So once he's there, they decide to let him stay, and he asks them to, after a time he's there for a while, he asks them if he can train, and they ask him where he wants to start. And in his pride, he says he will start with the 36th chamber, but they explain that, no, you need to start at the bottom. You need to start at the beginning. You can't jump all the way to the top. And so then he starts from the bottom, and is, I think his first station is, he has to cross a water, like a lake of logs, if he wants to get food. And so he has to learn how to balance upon these logs across the water. So this is a great lesson Mr. Miyagi would always also want Daniel to learn, is how do you keep your balance? So obviously everybody who's there training has to learn to do these things, but Yude learns how to do things much quicker than everybody else, because he is very observant and he notices things in nature. And as he notices things, he begins to apply them to how he accomplishes these tasks. And as he accomplishes each chamber, then he gets to go to the next chamber. And at a certain point, he actually learns how to fight finally. But and one of the ultimate things that happens is he has to learn, he's trying to beat these very skilled people in later on. And there's one person that keeps, there's always has to be a disdainer in the crowd, right? Someone that says like, he's not good enough, or we shouldn't have let him in. And he says that he will, if he beats him in a fight, then he can become like part of the group or part of the top. And he notices that a tree branch operates a certain way, and he creates this three-section staff. And but the whole thing is he wants to protect his family and friends that are remaining at home, and so he has to learn to do kung fu so he can protect them. But he also wants to teach normal people how they can fight for themselves so that these oppressive governments can't take over. So of course we're rooting for him. This is a movie that I heard about this movie many times from people, like as one of the greatest kung fu movies ever. And I think I might have even heard Quentin Tarantino talking about it. And it was one of these movies that are like, maybe I'll watch it one day. And I can't remember exactly, but it was on Amazon Prime. And I watched it and I was just entranced for the whole movie. I thought, this is one of the greatest movies of all time. So I finally get to talk about it today. I will say that currently it is on Amazon Prime for free as part of that. However, it's only in English dubbed. And so I joined Mubi for 1 week so that I could listen to it in the beautiful tones of actual Japanese, the actual Japanese that's spoken in the movie. I do not recommend the English dub. I hate dubbed movies in general, but the dubs on this movie are particularly bad. So that is my number one pick. Jason, tell me you've seen this one.
Of course I've seen it. Yes, of course I've seen it. And I've seen the two sequels. Have you gotten a chance to see any of the sequels yet?
I have not. I thought there was many sequels. I see many movies that are called something Shaolin. I think there was like zombies or vampires or something. That may be maybe a different direction. But I started to watch a different movie that came across as much more mocking or silly than these, so I wasn't sure I would like it. But maybe you can give me some recommendations of actual sequels I'll enjoy.
There are a bunch of knockoffs, and it happened all the time with old Hong Kong fight movies. There's just, when one gets popular, you see a ton of knockoffs. You see it with Bruce Lee movies. You see it with Jimmy Wang Yu movies. There's just tons of knockoffs. The real true two sequels to this are Return to the 36th Chamber and Disciples of the 36th Chamber. And if you are into Hong Kong movies, listeners, pick up the Shawscope volumes from Arrow. There's two volumes out now. Depending on when you're listening to this, there's one also coming out in November. But the second one, volume two, has all three of the 36th Chamber movies, and they're packed with extras too. So it looks great, and you can learn a lot about the movies, the making of the movies. I love the 36th Chamber movies, all three of them. Great.
Nice.
This is a great choice. I didn't even think of this, and you know, I actually thought of putting some type of Hong Kong movie on my list and just didn't. And I'm glad you had one on yours so we could talk about it. Awesome. Now, it's interesting that you said that you thought yours was the quintessential film. And I noticed that I do the same thing as you when I'm researching a list like this. I'll go online and I'll look at these lists of Zero to Hero movies. And to be honest, there aren't very many lists of Zero to Hero movies. I was very surprised. I thought there was going to be, you know, a letterbox list of 300 plus movies, and there's almost nothing out there. And I did not see the 36 Chamber movies on any of those lists. So nice job there. I also believe that my number one is the quintessential Zero to Hero movie. Did not see it on any lists at all. And I think that once you hear this title, I'm sure that you've seen it. When you hear it, you'll say, yeah, you know what? You're right. This should be on those lists. It is from 1964. It is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That neon-nosed reindeer is back.
His beak blinks like a blinking beacon.
Mingling with misfits. Battling snow monsters.
We'll have to cancel Christmas.
And lighting the way for jolly old Saint Nick.
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Global's got it tonight at 7:30.
This is a holiday favorite. I watch it every year. I'm sure many do. And maybe because it's a holiday movie, it gets the short end of the stick on those lists. But I think that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is the ultimate Zero to Hero. The movie starts with Donner and his wife having a baby named Rudolph. Something's different about him. You've all heard the song. His nose glows red. Now, Donner is a real dick. And instead of letting his kid just be himself, he rubs mud over his nose so he can hide it. And then later on, he has a fake nose that they slip over his nose to hide it more. And eventually that fake nose pops off when Rudolph gets really excited the first time that he flies. And when his nose pops off, everybody just loses their shit. They're like, you gotta go. Get out of here. Comet kicks him off the squad. He's basically run out of town. He runs away and eventually finds himself with a misfit elf named Hermie and a gold prospector named Yukon Cornelius. And they go to the island of Misfit Toys, which is a place where unloved and unwanted toys live. And they go on this adventure together. And you see Rudolph grow up away from his family, away from everything he was born into. And the three eventually take down the abominable snowman. And Rudolph decides that he's going to head back home. And he heads back home on Christmas Eve. Everybody's celebrating because it's Christmas Eve. But Santa walks in and announces that a huge snowstorm is coming. He's going to have to cancel Christmas. And of course, that's where Rudolph steps up, saves the day, saves the season, saves Christmas. You all know the story. You've probably heard the song a million times. This has been telecast every single year since 1964. It was originally on NBC and then switched over to CBS in 1972, which makes it the longest continuously running Christmas TV special in the United States ever. It is widely regarded as one of the best Christmas films ever made. It also has some sequels that you may not have seen. In 1976, there was Rudolph's Shiny New Year. That one aired on ABC and is still aired annually on ABC. And then there was Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July in 1979. And in 2001, there was a direct-to-video animated film called Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and the Island of Misfit Toys. So I'm sure that you've seen this before.
Oh, yeah, of course. Never thought of it being a zero-to-hero movie, though.
But when you watch it this year, watch it this year, just pay attention to that aspect. And it's so clear. Yeah, he's a zero-to-hero. I know there's a lot of honorable mentions. I want to mention some myself. But first, let's recap the list for the listeners. And I will go first there. At number five, I had Collateral from 2004. At number four, I had The Guyver from 1991. At number three, Godzilla Minus One from 2023. At number two, Disney's Hercules from 1997. And my number one, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer from 1964.
Okay, I had for number five, Monkey Man, directed by Dev Patel. That's 2024. Number four is Karate Kid, directed by John G. Avildsen, which is 1984. I think I maybe just said that twice. The Black Stallion, directed by Carol Ballard, 1979. Kill Bill Volume 2, directed by Quentin Tarantino. I don't have the year on that.
2004.
Oh, great. And then The 36th Chamber of Shaolin, directed by Lau Kar-Lung.
Awesome list. I'm so happy that we didn't have any repeats on our list. And even an honorable mention that I have on mine, I thought you would mention it. And I'm glad it was left off because it's been talked about here before. Before I get to my honorable mentions, though, what did you have that just couldn't make your list?
Yeah, I mean, I will mention a couple. I think you're right, though, that there, I guess because of those, like my separation between like underdog stories, and I have special feelings and things I'm looking for. So there aren't as many zero to hero as I thought there were in for my definition. But the ones I did have that I wrote down were Rocky, which is another Avildsen, of course. Whiplash, that's on the border because that could be a zero to anti-hero. I don't know how people feel about his ending decisions in his path. And then Evil Dead 2.
That's a good one.
With Ash, you know, becoming the ultimate action hero after he is left fighting a bunch of ghoulies. So those are the three I had for honorable mentions.
All right, good choices. Yeah, I was a little surprised that Rocky didn't come up at all, but I'm glad that it was mentioned here in the honorable mentions. That was also on my honorable mentions. One that I had mentioned that I left off because it had been on another list previous, and I actually felt bad leaving it off my montage movie list, was Mulan from 1998, but I didn't want to have two different Disney movies on my list. Speaking of Disney movies, I also considered the movie trope of zero to hero, then back to zero, then back to hero in one film. And that came up twice. And I was like, you know what? Maybe that could be a separate list. The double zero to hero. One would be The Hudsucker Proxy by the Coen brothers, where the main character, I think his name is Norville, he starts as a zero, then is made the president of the company, then becomes really successful, and then he becomes a zero again, and then he has to become a hero again. Same with the similar Disney movie made for TV, the garbage-picking, field-goal-kicking Philadelphia Phenomenon, starring Tony Danza. That's another zero-to-hero to zero-to-hero story. I considered Nobody with Bob Odenkirk, but, you know, he's portrayed as a kind of zero at first, but you realize there's more to him than you might have thought. So I didn't really feel like that fit. Mm-hmm. To go along with your Karate Kid pick, I almost played The Art of Self-Defense, directed by Riley Stearns. That is such a hilarious movie.
Yeah.
I love that one. And then the last one that I'll mention, I didn't rewatch it, so I just That's one of the only reasons I kept it off. Bad Company, where Chris Rock and Anthony Hopkins star. Chris Rock plays twins, but his twin was killed in the line of duty, and they have to use Chris Rock as the twin's brother to like infiltrate, do some CIA work. So he basically goes from nothing to being a hero. I remember liking that in, what, 2002 when it came out?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lindsay Dunn, before we get out of here, let's plug your stuff one more time. Again, links to this stuff will be in the show notes. But so, for somebody new to your website, to one of your stories, or one of my stories, I guess. I want to say one of your stories, but the website, one of my stories with the number one. Where would you have people start? Would you have them start with a certain piece, a certain avenue, like a YouTube channel, podcast, website?
Yeah, I mean, you had said like additional plugs. One thing I wanted to mention was that if you like, besides movies, I do also do recaps of select TV shows. The big show is the one I recapped with Steve Barnes, which is Dark, which is the German sci-fi travel show. If you like that show and you've always wanted to see recaps or want to revisit it, I've recapped every single episode of that show through both writing and YouTube. My recaps are like the number one recap on Google now.
Nice.
I've leveled up to that position. As far as where to start, though, I think, you know, people usually get interested through current things, you know, looking at what are you doing right now. And so things are a little bit slow at the moment just because I'm trying to do, besides stories with movies, I'm trying to capture stories of people that I went to an Alabama pilgrimage with, where we visited civil rights things. So right now I'm doing that. But my last review was pretty funny. It was about the movie Caligula, which was remade, which was a movie I really hated, but I did a lot of research for that movie and enjoyed bashing that movie a lot. So that would be a fun one to read to get a flavor, but also just, you know, going to oneofmystories.com and looking at what I've done recently. You might also, if they're like, there's a certain genre you like, I do label all my reviews by genre. So if you want to see what I did with horror, sci-fi, you can just put in that search term and come up with looking at the reviews I've done. I've been writing since 2007, so I do have a lot of stuff on there going back to several years. So if you have a favorite movie, go on there and see what I have. But I also, and it's on my Linktree, I do review more movies on Letterboxd than I do on the website, because there's just many movies to watch and I can't write about everything. I do this as a part-time gig. So if you're on Letterboxd, you can also go to one of my stories there and look for that. So I think those are some places I would start.
All right, cool. And like I said, all of that will be in the show notes. So check out Lindsay, check out her various brands. Thanks so much for coming on, Lindsay. This was a great topic. I had a great time rewatching some of these movies, and hopefully our listeners have some motivation to go back and watch some zero to hero films.
Yeah, Jason, thank you so much for having me on, and ditto. Yes, this was fun to watch these, and especially getting to watch 36 Chamber again and getting to talk to somebody who's actually seen it before.
What did we leave off that should have been on our lists? Let me know by emailing me at force5podcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at force5pod. You'll find links to support guests and Force 5 in the show notes. Two very easy and very free ways to support me are to review Force 5 wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends about the show. The Force 5 theme song comes courtesy of Nate Spears. Outro music comes from Cheesecake Chad, and the top 5 list bumper was produced by me with music from Audio Binger. You only get one life. Spend it with the people and the movies that you love.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description